speaker. So we're really excited to have a second speaker on this workshop. Our next speaker is the first person that I ever identified with in OA. I'm very excited to have her here. And that is Sheila Jay, who will talk to us about sponsoring chronic slippers through love and tolerance. Everyone will be muted until the very end of the workshop when you can unmute for sharing. If you have a question for Sheila, please type it into the chat to the Ask It basket after she finishes sharing. If you have a technical question or problem, please text or call Jerry at 808-250-1212. If you need to move around or eat during the workshop, please turn off your video to avoid distracting speakers and participants as we can see everything you do. Okay, go ahead, Sheila. And I'm looking on the screen, but I don't see you. Are you here, Sheila?
I'm indeed here.
There she is. Yay! And Phil's going to start recording. Yay!
Hi, everybody. So my name is Sheila. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm down here in Los Angeles, and I'm very, very grateful to be here. Carrie, thank you for having me. What a pleasure. And I love Sacramento. I love it. I got to participate, speak at one of your events up there a couple of years ago, and I'd never been. And what a beautiful city. And I had such great people hosting me from Sacramento. You have such wonderful Overeaters Anonymous there. And I remember somebody telling me, I'm just a tree nut, right, and a tree hugger. And they said that Sacramento is second only to Paris, France, in terms of the number of trees for either per person or square mile. I don't know what the delineation was, but I knew I loved the city. And it's a beautiful town, and you have wonderful Overeaters Anonymous, and it's really a pleasure to be here. So thank you. Thank you for having me. And Don, I'm sorry I can't hear it. I look forward to hearing the recording. It sounds like it was wonderful. I just heard as I was coming in on the tail end with the question. And I'm on the board down here in LA, and you know, we were hustling. I mean, I wasn't hustling. I'm not chair of the board, but you know, I was just, you know, fingers crossed, prayers, all that stuff to try and fulfill my responsibilities there, and then be here today. And I'm glad it worked out. We ended early, and I'm delighted to be here. So again, love Sacramento OA and love Overeaters Anonymous. And
you have 5 minutes. At the end, or would you like different timing?
Oh, you're kind. That'll be lovely. Thank you. And okay. I'll keep an eye. And I know I finish at 12:15. Is that correct? Just so I can keep an eye on my... All right. And Carrie had said something. So, and I just want to make sure I'm clear. So it's not about sponsoring people with love and tolerance. And so what I talk about is love and forgiveness, because I was a chronic slipper. So I've been in Overeaters Anonymous for 32 years, and I only have 20 years of abstinence. And all that means is that for those dozen years, I just wasn't ready to feel the feelings. That's all it means. I just wasn't ready to feel those feelings. And I had a lot of feelings that were necessarily going to come up because I was molested when I was a child on two different occasions, with two different men on numerous occasions. So I had a lot of big feelings. And we know this is a huge thing in Overeaters Anonymous. I've heard anywhere, statistics anywhere, I don't even want to put them out because I'm widely divergent. But I know years ago I worked for a psychiatrist. I know the numbers are very high. We know it's high enough that Overeaters Anonymous just finally published their book a couple of weeks ago. It's out, and it talks about sexual trauma and body dysmorphia. My story is one of the stories in that book. And there's a huge correlation between sexual trauma and eating disorders. It certainly doesn't mean that that's the experience of everybody. And those experiences that people can have run the gamut, right? But that was my experience. And I started in Al-Anon, and then realized a year in, I probably wanted to pay attention to my own drinking and not worry about the drinking in my family. And I'm clean and sober now, 3 months in Alcoholics Anonymous. This was back in, you know, late 80s. And I turned to somebody 3 months in and I said, can you have a problem with sugar the same way you have a problem with alcohol? And she said, absolutely, go to Overeaters Anonymous. And had I followed the direction in that first Overeaters Anonymous, where I was directed, because I revealed after the meeting that I had a profound problem with sugar, my top weight's 200 pounds, I weigh about 135 pounds now. That's the least interesting transformation that's happened to me here. But I ended up revealing to this woman after the meeting that I had, you know, again, this incredible problem with sugar. I have a filling in just about every molar in my mouth. And she said, because I wasn't clear what this abstinence thing was. I knew in AA you didn't drink, so I figure in Overeaters Anonymous, you don't eat. I know I showed up at the 11 a.m. meeting not having eaten because I didn't know how this worked, right? And she said, do you think you could eat 3 meals today and not eat any sugar? And I'm assuming the conversation went beyond that. And we would want the conversation to go beyond that, right? We wouldn't ever want to have a newcomer in a meeting who says, what do I do? And we say, 3 meals a day, no sugar. Good luck with that. See you next week. I'm assuming the conversation went beyond that. I know I never saw that woman again. She was finishing her doctorate in accounting, and I was in the 7th year of my 4-year undergraduate degree. So I was already impressed with her. But I don't remember whether or not the conversation went beyond that, but I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt. And even if it didn't, I knew how this worked because at that point I had 15 months in one fellowship and 3 months clean and sober in AA. So I knew how this worked. I knew that, right, the credits don't transfer here from fellowship to fellowship, but the study habits always do. So I certainly knew how this worked, right? I knew you would want to get a sponsor and start working the steps. It is a 12-step program. And, but I left that meeting. And I remember, because again, now it's, 12:30, getting close to 1 o'clock and I'm hungry. And I remember I went to a restaurant and I went in and I thought, 3 meals a day, no sugar. I went in and I ordered a meal, ate that meal, finished it, went out and sat in my car. And I thought, 3 meals a day, no sugar. Oh, it's got to be more complicated than that. And for the next dozen years, I proceeded to complicate it. But the one thing that happened, because a couple weeks later, I got a sponsor and she directed me to start working the steps. And it became clear a week or two in that I was not ready to put down the sugar and I wasn't ready to stop the quantity eating. I simply wasn't ready to feel the feelings. I didn't know that then. I thought it was a moral issue. It's not. It's never a moral issue. If you're not abstinent here and you want to be, it's not a moral issue. If you're abstinent and not at a goal weight that feels comfortable for you, it's not a moral issue. None of those things are true, right? I didn't know that at the time. But I had this wonderful sponsor and she gave me incredible direction. And this would have been, because this was 1988, so this would have been 3 years before the first edition of the OA 12 and 12 came out. And that's an important piece of information. Because again, a couple weeks in, it became clear I wasn't ready to stop the quantity eating and I wasn't ready to stop eating sugar. And she said, just keep working the steps. And the one good thing about having come from an alcoholic family, my parents aren't alcoholics, but my grandfathers were, maternal and paternal. The one great thing is that I have a healthy respect for authority figures. I don't argue with sponsors or cops. So when somebody directs me how to do something here, I just do it. But I don't do it for the reasons that I did it in my home. I do it because the thing I felt the first time I came in 12-step meetings, and it is the same thing I feel every single time I come into a meeting. I just felt it in the meeting I just left. I'm already feeling it here. I feel the love. I feel your love. And I didn't have a lot of experience feeling that in my home. I didn't. My parents were troubled people, having come from those alcoholic families they came from. My mother gave me absolutely everything that she had in her bag. She emptied her bag. She emptied her bag. The problem is she just didn't have a lot in her bag. But so I feel the love here, and I just want to do what it is you want me to do. And in the beginning, I wanted to do it because it felt so good to be here. I was afraid if I didn't do what you asked me to do, that you were going to ask me to leave. And I could not lose this. I could not lose what I experienced right from the beginning. There's a great poem by Marabi, and the last lines are, I have felt the sway of the elephant's shoulders. And now you want me to climb on a jackass? Try to be serious. I did not want to miss out on this. I did not want to lose what it is. So I just did what was asked of me. It didn't make any sense to me that I was going to keep working the steps, despite the fact I was still in the food, but I was not going to debate this. The only correct answer to a sponsor is yes. I don't debate with sponsors. So I just did it. Okay. So again, came in, top weight's 200 pounds. My dad had 3 overweight daughters. I was the youngest of 5 children, probably an unplanned pregnancy. My siblings are all much closer in age. And my dad was, he was very unkind. He had 3 overweight daughters and he did not like it. And he was very verbal about it. But my oldest sister, he'd throw a softball at her. She'd throw 7 back. My middle sister actually worked in my dad's business, so he wasn't going to give her too much grief. So I was an easy target. And he would make these comments publicly. And again, I was the only one in my family who was molested. And so already the game was different for me. I showed up with shame. Shame is a huge, huge part of my story. And I was already feeling ashamed. I did not need the man who was supposed to communicate to me loud and clear that I was a beautiful princess, right? As all women are beautiful princesses, and all men are princes on steeds, right? That should be the communication that all of us got. Probably I'm not the only one who didn't get that communication, but I certainly know that I didn't get it. And so it compounded the shame. It just stacked up. Incident after incident, you know, the stuff, the trauma I'd experienced sexually, and then these comments from my father. I mean, I was just a troubled young woman and started acting out in various ways because I could not cope with the pain. And so then when I ended up in OA and this sponsor is saying, just work the steps, that was a healing balm for me. It really was, because that I could do. I could not stop eating sugar. I could not stop doing the quantity eating, but I could certainly read and write on a daily basis. At that time, I wasn't directed to making daily outreach calls. That came later, years down the road. But had I been directed to that very specifically, I would have done that too. Though that was the hardest piece of the puzzle for me to get, because I felt so unworthy for so long. Right, that low self-esteem, that character defect. But I could do what she asked me to do, which was to work the steps. So again, I came in, it's February of 1988, top weight's 200 pounds. Now I get this sponsor who says, just keep working the steps. And I remember when I got to that first four step, and all my whole 12-step process started in Michigan. So we were largely influenced by the Alcoholics Anonymous of Bob Smith from Ohio, who was a member of Al-Anon. I just learned this week. Bob's theory was you just keep going through the steps over and over and over again, right? So you finish the step, there's no pressure, right? And at some point, you know, I mean, I was 5 or 10 times before I was through the steps before anybody said, have you worked the traditions yet? Right? Have you worked the concepts yet? And so there's a bunch of things to do, but I just kept cycling through. But at any rate, on this first run, I'm going through and I get to that first fourth step. And again, I'm still doing quantity eating. I'm still eating sugar. And my sponsor, I remember saying to my sponsor, I said, now, you know, are you sure? You're sure you want me to do this? Because, you know, I kind of hear different things in meetings, but, you know, are you sure you want me to do it? And she said, Sheila, I don't care if you have a Snickers bar in your left hand and a pen in your right hand. You get that four step done. So that I can do. I am a good worker bee. I am a good drone. I know how to do what somebody is asking me. My father trained me well. He gave direction and the expectation was that you were going to follow it. So I just did that. And through that process, right? So I'm doing that for a couple of years. I probably got through the steps a time or two. And I'm 180 pounds. So I'm 26 years old. My whole journey started in 12-step programs. I was 22 or 23 when I started in the first program. But I weigh 180 pounds and I'm 26 years old. I'm at a family event. I've finally finished college, right? And I walk by my dad, and again, somewhere there's a picture of me. I can see me. I can see exactly what I'm wearing. And my dad said, and again, there's probably 10 people around, and he said, "Okay, I see you're losing some weight, but you've got a lot more to go. Don't let up." And I turned around and I said, "No more. That's it. It's over. You do not talk to me about my weight anymore. It's over." And everybody was kind of looking, you know, like, God, because nobody talked to my dad like that. And I wasn't trying to be disrespectful. I was really just meeting fire with fire, I guess. And because it was never appropriate for my father to comment on my body or my body weight. And most importantly, it was never appropriate for him to communicate that my value had anything to do with what I weighed. That is the lie and the father of lies for all of us. And but after that day, my father never spoke to me about my weight again. Now it was another 10 years before I got abstinent, right? But nobody could tell me that that wasn't recovery. Nobody could tell me that because I finally got to stand up to the bully, right? And I would get through the steps another 8, 9, 10, 12 times, whatever it was, before I got abstinent. But it was just such a miracle that I just kept working those steps, because I have to tell you, I never have been at my top weight again. I have not weighed 200 pounds since February of 1988. And I am thoroughly convinced it is because I was working those steps over and over and over again. And there was a healing that needed to happen. It would be great if my problem was my weight. It would be terrific. It's not. It's a heart issue. It's always been a heart issue. Perhaps for all of us, but I know it's always been a heart issue for me. I don't love easily and I don't forgive easily. It was dangerous to love and forgive in my home. It was. So I did not learn that very, very basic skill. But through that process of going through those steps over and over and over again, it finally felt safe to get abstinent. And I'm going to just leave it there because now I want to talk about sponsorship and how this shows up in terms of love and forgiveness. Okay. So it was such an act of self-love for me to just follow that direction, because through the years, it just didn't make any sense. And my weight kept getting lower and lower and lower, but I wasn't abstinent, so I couldn't sponsor people or do anything like that. And then I became abstinent and started putting some time together. And I remember approaching one of my sponsors and saying, because again, I have sponsors in all my programs, I approached my OA sponsor and said, do you think it would be okay if I sponsored Chronic Slippers exclusively? Because I have my ESH, right? I have my experience, strength, and hope. I'm thoroughly convinced, quite obviously. I'm not doing anything that Susan can't do or Carrie can't do or Phil can't do, right? I don't have a messianic complex, but I do have my ESH. I do have my experience, strength, and hope. And there were things I found that worked very, very well. And it just made sense because at the time, and I think we've gotten, you know, we as a fellowship are growing more loving and I hope so. Or maybe it just seems that way because I'm growing more loving because I'm getting more consistent access to my heart. But because we want to make sure that Overeaters Anonymous is a safe place for people. You know, it's not a requirement to be abstinent. It's not a requirement to weigh a certain amount or anything. This is supposed to be a safe place. Being overweight is the only prejudice that is still actively sanctioned in society. It's okay to make cheeky comments. I mean, people do it on late night shows all the time. You know, sitcoms are built around overweight characters. Saturday Night Live always has an overweight comedian. And when something happens to that one, oftentimes they perish. They just bring another one up. I mean, it's really horrible. But Overeaters Anonymous is supposed to be a safe place for people. So that's always my commitment, right? And I'm glad I don't weigh 200 pounds anymore. I have some health issues, and I'm glad I'm not dealing with that X factor. And I do feel a responsibility. It is a program of attraction. So it feels like, for me, it's important for me to do the work so that I feel safe enough so that I can put the food down. If for no other reason, I don't want to be locked in for a lifetime within that miasma of pain behind the sexual trauma, right? So my sponsor said, sure, that's fine. And what I do is I sponsor exclusively from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I love the OA conference approved literature. I have not read it all, quite obviously, but I have been through the workbook. I've done the workbook, in conjunction with the 12 and 12 that we have. I've done it 3 or 4 times over the years. But I I really love the Big Book, and it really speaks to me for a number of reasons. First of all, it is the primary source material, right? There are apparently 700 different groups. Isn't that amazing to think of 700 different pathologies that utilize the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous? But, you know, it's the primary source material. And I love it because it gives very specific direction. And direction was really good for me, especially in the midst of that pain. It was really good for me. And there's always the conversation where it's talked about, people talk about, you know, suggestions in program. I don't use that language because the Big Book, there are a couple different places in the book. It has suggestion. It talks about suggestion, and it's in italics. Anytime there's anything in the Big Book in italics, play with it and have fun with it, because that's why they're putting it in italics. But it's, the book is full of direction, and the direction really served me. And I have found that it serves people really well. So, because we want to get to that place where people feel safe enough that they can access their heart. The only reason somebody doesn't put the food down is they don't feel safe enough. It doesn't feel safe enough. And if I could, in a conversation, make somebody feel safe, make somebody know it's all right to put the food down, that would be great. I would love it if I could do that. My mother and my brother wouldn't be dead. They both died of diabetes. My brother was 36. My mother was 68. They both died of diabetes, and they died horrific deaths. It doesn't work that way. We have an A, B, and C we read at the end of how it works. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. C, that God couldn't, would if he were sought. So it is that process of working the steps that is going to do the healing. Now, I think I'd submitted a couple of handouts. Do we have that first handout, which is the original How It Works? We're just going to take a peek at one quick thing. Did I get those out? And it's okay if we didn't. I can, it might have been.
Yeah, I don't think we got that one out.
Okay. All right. You know, perhaps I... Oh, very good. Okay, so that's the fourth step, Jer. Thank you so much. And we'll get to that too, but is there a, did I send the other one, the original How It Works, or is this the only one I sent?
That's the only one. This is a...
No worries. We'll get to that in a minute. I'll tell you what, we will get to that in a minute. And here, I can keep this really simple, and you can put it in Google, put in original How It Works. And the thing that I wanted to get to, there's a couple of different things, but I'll just tell you this, is Bill Wilson wrote everything from, other than, you know, starting on with his story through the end of A Vision for You. Bill Wilson wrote every page in the Big Book, in those pages, except for what we read and How It Works from 58 to the middle of page 60, to the end of that ABC. Because what happened is he had originally written those pages, but he came down like a hammer, and he uses the word like directions, and, you know, takes it away from the royal we, some components of it, and says, you this, you that. He really was trying to bring home how powerful and how important it was. And this is, I think this here, we have the conventional How It Works. That's great. But, what he originally had, you know how we have at the end there. So we're on page 60, right? So we get to the end of that ABC, and it says, being convinced we were at step three, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood him. Well, what Bill says instead at the end of the A, B, and C, he says, if you're not convinced of what you've read up to this point, because this gets you up to step two. You're still in step two. He says, if you're not convinced at this point, just throw the book away. Just throw it away, right? So he came down like a hammer. And so the first 100 people, you know, the 99 men and the one woman said, oh, no, 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 Bill. No, 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 no. You gotta ease it back. So he let those people weigh in, and we got kind of that gentler How It Works that we read from 58 to 60. But the reason I bring it up is because I want to show somebody, the expectation was from one of the co-founders that we were going to be following direction. That and that's really, really powerful to get. What I tell people is I say, if you want to call them suggestions. But it's a suggestion like if you fall in a pool, I suggest you start moving your arms and your legs. You're going to have to, there are myriad times throughout this book, it says you're going to have to do things that are going to seem entirely outlandish. Like, are you kidding me? No, not kidding you. So I love that because I let the book be the bad cop, if you will. My sponsor always says to me, hey, I'll always be your bad cop. You can say to your sponsees, look, I know I don't always want to make outreach calls on a daily basis because my sponsor makes me make 3 outreach calls on a daily basis. I don't always think it's a great idea too either, but my sponsor wants me to. My sponsor says, I'll always be your bad cop. And oftentimes I will let the big book, right, be my bad cop, right? Because again, it gives all kinds of direction here. And it's really essential, especially given the people that I work with, because there was a period of time where I just oftentimes saw people who had been struggling for years, like I had, sitting in the back of the room in pain because they felt like for whatever reason they had not been invited to the party. And I knew that pain well. And I unhappily observed either seeing it or hearing about it or getting a communication in an outreach call or something that people didn't want to deal with the chronic people who were chronic slippers. You know, Bill Wilson used that term. He wrote about it in a Grapevine article, chronic slipper. He identified himself as a chronic slipper. It's not a pejorative thing, just information. But I thought, well, that's not okay, right? In our traditions, our primary purpose is to stay sober and help others achieve sobriety. Here it's to get abstinent and help others who achieve abstinence. Well, how do I do that if I'm not willing to help the people who are chronically sipping? So, you know, we got a bunch of people and we're not going to hit everybody, but right now we're all looking at a screen of 25 people because you have, you know, a nice meeting here. So we got screens of these people, but just on these 25, I'm staring, we got a couple people who are, I can't see the screen, but raise your hand if you are somebody who came in Overeaters Anonymous and you got abstinent on day one and you've never lost your abstinence. Okay, so on this screen of 25, 23 people that I can see, 2 people are their screens off, videos off. There's 1 person, right? Who is that? That's Jerry. Yeah, that's great, Jerry. That's really great. We all probably wanted what Jerry did. And that is really cool. That is way cool. I am really glad that there were people, but that's 1 out of 25. That's 4%. And those numbers always stay static. And I know because I lead retreats all over the world. And I always ask that question. If there's 100 people in the room, there's 2 or 3. There's not a lot of people who came in and did what she did. And all it means is she was ready to feel the feelings that are naturally going to result when you put the food down. That's all it means. And I'm sure with that kind of recovery, and she's hosting, so she already, we already know she does a lot of service. So she would probably tell you this first and foremost, right? That it was a gift and she was blessed and all those great things, but it was something that we all wanted. But that means most of us then were people who struggled. Some people, I feel quite sure there are people on the meeting here who aren't abstinent and want to be. Well, my job is to be of service to those people. A lot of people want to sponsor the new people, and that's great. Game on, right? A lot of people want to do that. And I don't have a messianic complex. I don't do it for any other reason but that I have my esh. And I want to introduce to somebody, as it eventually got introduced to me, and it landed for me, finally, year after year after year of working those steps, it finally landed that I was safe here and I could work the steps and I could put the food down. The world was safe. I finally got it. I don't know when that tipping point happened, but I finally got it through that process year after year after year, that it was safe for me to put the food down. And how that happened is through going through these steps over and over and over again and following direction, right? So 5 or 6 years in, I got this going with my sponsor. I'm sponsoring the chronic slippers, and I'm leading a meeting, right? And a young girl comes up to me and she said, I'd led the meeting and I'd shared what I just told all of you, right? That I'd started working the steps at sponsor direction. I did not come up with a good idea. I did not figure it out. Figuring it out is not a tool of the program. It's not a step in the program. I was following sponsor direction. But this young girl, she was so cute, right? She had like a couple of years, sweet little thing. She came up and she was the secretary of the meeting. And this was after I led the meeting. And she said, you can't share that. You can't share what you just shared. And I said, what? And she said, yeah. She said, well, you said that you worked the steps and you weren't abstinent. You can't do that. And I said, I can't. And she said, no, I don't think so. My sponsor told me I need to be abstinent to work the steps. And I said, and this is the wisest thing. Here's the way that you put this out and you'd never get in an argument in 12-step rooms ever again. As I say, I said, well, that just wasn't my experience. Because my experience was I was directed to work the steps. And through that process of going through those steps year after year after year, I finally felt safe enough behind the sexual trauma and other bad stuff that went on in my house. I came from a violent house, right? And we got belted pretty good. But the worst was that nobody knew how to talk to anybody. That was worse than anything that happened in my home. But I finally felt safe enough to put the food down. So when somebody, well-meaning, sweet, you know, loving, young, says, well, you have to be absent before you can work the steps. First of all, there isn't any kind of direction about that. Everybody here is just working with good intentions. Your abstinence is between you, your sponsor, and God, right? I just don't want to be directing myself. That's where I get into trouble. But, and that was not my experience. And I know that it worked because 2 years in, I got to stand up to the bully. I'm still 180 pounds, still doing the problem eating, but I don't hate myself as much as I did in the beginning. And I want to clarify to my father that this is not acceptable and this is not going to happen anymore. That was real recovery. And then a couple years later, I go to a meeting at sponsor direction, checking out a new meeting. My sponsor thought I needed more meetings. I didn't, but I keep my mouth shut, right? Only correct answer to a sponsor is yes. And I wander into this 12 and 12, OA 12 and 12 meeting. And we are on step 4. And it's page, I think it's 31. It's in the first edition. They changed it in the second, which is why I only keep the first. But I think it's on 30, it's either a 30, 31, it wraps around. It's on the four step. It starts on one page, goes to the next, and it says, look, we think it's a good idea that you would be abstinent before you take a four step. We think it would be a good idea. However, maybe taking a four step, even if you're still in the food, will be the very thing that will actually encourage you to conclusively take a third step. So 3 years before that book was written, I had a sponsor directing me to working the steps, regardless of whether or not I was still in the food. Then that book comes out. So it's corroborated by conference approved literature. And I am so grateful that the will of God, which is that we would all be free, that we would feel happy, joyous, and free, and loved for who we are and how we are, whether we're abstinent, no matter what we weigh, no matter what happened to us. I want people to be free. And I have heard too many horror stories here over the years on fifth steps. I've heard things that would curl your hair, that would absolutely blow your mind. You cannot imagine some of the painful things that people have been through. And I am so grateful that because of my experience, strength, and hope in my life, I don't debate with anybody. I do not get into that larger conversation in Overeaters Anonymous about whether you need to be abstinent and this and that. It never made any sense to me that someone's coming into a 12-step program and we're saying to them, okay, you're powerless over your food behaviors. You're powerless over that. And it's the steps that will God empower you to be able to put the food down. Oh, but by the way, we're telling you, you have to have however many days of abstinence before you can start working the steps. Huh? Like, I never got that. But again, I'm not arguing with anybody here. I don't argue with people in 12-step programs because we are hard-headed, every one of us, and we want to win. But I don't want to win. I don't want to win. I got a sponsor who reminds me, you want to win an argument? Reveal your underbelly. Get vulnerable. So what I say to somebody is, I hear you. I hear you. I get it that that's your experience. It's not mine. It's not mine. And take people through the steps, through the book, as are outlined in the book. And let's just take a peek here because I know I'm heading home. I think I've got 5 minutes. So if somebody would bring up that, I guess it's Phil's doing that for us. Phil, if you'd bring up that 4-step because we're going to take a look at this resentment thing. So there are 3 parts to a big book inventory. And so we're looking at the resentments. And remember, resentment is just a $2 word for, I don't forgive you, asshole. That's all a resentment is. It's, I don't forgive you. Any name that you have on your 4-step, it's because you haven't forgiven them. And it could be, they did this or they stole your guitar, or cut your hair in third grade, like I cut a girl's hair in third grade, right? Or they molested you, right? Whatever it is, it's, I don't forgive you. That's why they're on the list. So, starting with the obvious, right? The big ticket items. So let's, these two men have molested me and let's just stick with the one, the more egregious. And let's just call him Lenny, right? So I'm resentful at Lenny because molested me when I was a kid on numerous occasions. And again, you see, there's not a lot of, and I did not create this template. Somebody created this for me, but the big book does this, right? So the inventory, it starts for us on page, we get this here. Let's take a look here. Let's look at this. We don't have time to look at everything in the book here, but we get this. We have, some communication on third step and stuff. And again, there's just not time for everything, but this all starts on page 65 as we're looking at this, right? So here it is in your book. Make sure when you read your big book, read 2 pages a day in your big book. You'll get through it in about 10 months. When you finish, do it again. And highlight and annotate every time on something, on every page, at least one thing. I always tell my sponsees. But at any rate, we see there's not a lot of story in a big book inventory because the big book doesn't want you to have a story. You don't want to have a story behind your resentments. There's only 3 purposes of story, right? I'm a writer. I work here in LA. The first purpose of story is to entertain. The second purpose of story, Aristotle gave us this 2,800 years ago, it's to create a catharsis, right? So people go to horror movies, and I mean, I don't go to horror movies, but people go to horror movies because, the monster jumps out and, everybody screams and you have that collective experience with a group of people, a safe group of people in a theater to have those, those 3 o'clock in the morning fears come out. That's another purpose of story. The other purpose, though, and this is particularly relevant to us, and it's why we don't want to have a story in a big book inventory. It's to get you on my team. Because if you're on my team, I'm the good guy. And whoever they are, whoever I'm pissed off at and not forgiving, they're the bad guy. Lenny's the bad guy. I don't want Lenny to be the bad guy. Mm-mm. People who feel good about themselves don't molest little girls. I have no idea what happened in Lenny's life. But I know I've listened to fist steps from men in this program and in other programs, and men who molested children, and they were molested themselves. So wounded birds wound other birds. So we don't have a lot of story here. I'm resentful at Lenny, the cause, molested me when I was a kid on numerous occasions, affects my self-esteem. Because see, people are just checking boxes here. Affects my self-esteem, personal relationships, affect me materially, affect me emotionally, affected my security, affected me sexually. Uh-huh. Right? And then you're looking at that fourth column, the very, very powerful fourth column, which gets clarified for us on page 67. It shows up in the prose, and it's, where am I selfish, dishonest, and frightened? Well, it's easy to see where you'd be frightened if you were molested. Where was I dishonest? Remember, resentment is just, I don't forgive you, and I'm just very conscious here because I know we got to head home here. Remember, dishonest, resentment is just, I don't forgive you. Well, if Lenny's on my four step, well, that means I don't forgive him, except I want to be forgiven. I've done hurtful things in life. I want to be forgiven. So is it dishonest for me not to forgive Lenny? Now, I've never molested anybody, but it doesn't say that. It doesn't say anything about tit for tat. It just says, am I dishonest? Do I want to be forgiven? I do. So it's dishonest for me to not forgive Lenny. Right? And that landed for me. And that, and again, there's just not enough time here to so I know I'm rushing here, and I do want to pay attention to your time guidelines. And then just closing out, it was selfish because, and again, my loving sponsor brought this up. She hadn't been molested, but she had a very loving communication, just helped me to see that in being locked in with that anger and not forgiving Lenny, the Lennies of the world, I was not available. I was not available to you. I was not available to a loving God of my understanding. I was not available to the world, plants, animals. Why? Because I wasn't available to me. That's why the big book says resentment is not for us. It'll kill you. So what the book is really telling me, forgive everybody of everything all the time. That's how you get free. And that kind of radical thinking and direction and a path to get there is why I'm absent today. But that's why I tell you, weighing 135 or 130, I don't even know what I weigh. I don't have a scale in my house. I know the clothing in my closet fits. I know what I weigh when I go to the gym. It's the least interesting transformation. I have access to my heart, and you have given me that. You've given me a life. So I owe you my life. So you got it. I'm delighted to be here, and I apologize for going to I just been a door and a half over, right? That old perfectionist stuff. There's another character defect there. That's what I got for you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Sheila. I enjoyed hearing you again. Thank you so much. And I wanted to ask you before I forget, will you post your information for the sponsorship workshop you're doing tomorrow night?
I sure will.
Okay? Okay, yep. Great. Yeah, Sheila's speaking again tomorrow night. Let's see, I got to find out where I am. Okay, if you have a question for Sheila, please type it in the chat to the Ask It basket. Your question will be read to Sheila, who will respond. So Phil's going to enable the chat, and our Ask It basket, Gail, will read the questions.
Chat's enabled.
Thank you.
Thanks, Phil. And thank you so much, Sheila. My first question that appeared is, could you please tell the story of the red boat?
That's from me.
Sure. Yeah. No, I just always say, right, if you're drowning, a blue boat, a red boat, a purple boat, a green boat, a brown boat, black boat will save your life. But you got to get out of the water, and you got to get in the boat. You got to get in the boat. And if you got in my boat, you got the red rowboat, and presumably you got in my boat because you want what I have, and you want what I have. You might want to do what I still do, and if you decide you don't want to be in my boat, no problem. If you decide you don't want what I have, this is not a problem. Let me tell you something. On my bad days, I don't want what I have. Right? That doesn't mean you need to jump back in the water. Do not jump back in the water. I will row you up alongside. I'll row you up alongside Carrie's catamaran, right? I'm going to hold your hand while you're getting on her catamaran. She's going to catamaran you away, whatever they do, right? And I'm going to be blowing kisses, hoping you remember what I talked to you about with outreach calls. And maybe you'll give me one of those sometime.
Thank you.
So lots of boats in the harbor. Anybody can help you. There's no run right way to do this. Just don't do it alone.
Okay, thanks, Sheila. I have another question. Do you mean you can work the steps without being abstinent by using steps 4 to 12? It says, I don't understand how you could work step 3 if you are still eating.
It is a process. It has been a process. All I can tell you is what my experience was. For the love of God, I would have loved it if I could have surrendered the compulsive overeating and the sugar eating in February of 1988 when I came in Overeaters Anonymous. I would have loved it. I would have avoided myriad problems in my life. It's mind-boggling how many problems in my life I would have avoided. But I could not do it. I could not feel the feelings. I don't know if that meant I would have had a psychotic break. I know I worked for a psychiatrist at one point, and, you know, we used to have great conversations and stuff. I don't know what it means. All I know is I couldn't do it. And I got a sponsor 2 weeks in. All I did was follow direction. So yes, is it possible to take a third step when you're still in the food? Of course it is. How do I know? Because I did it. How do I know I did it? Because 2 years in, I'd lost 20 pounds. So something was working in those 20, in those 2 years. So there, you don't take a third step one time. The third step is not a destination. It's a journey. Just like forgiveness is not a destination. It's a journey. I've had a lot of, you know, gremlin anger and stuff come up around Lenny and Marvin just in the last year because of some stuff happening in my life around the sexual trauma. It's not a journey. I mean, it's not a destination. It's a journey. So it has been a process. So I can't remember what was happening. I don't know in that first, in that first third step, did that mean that maybe I was, if I overate, I tell people this, if you're binging, put a napkin in your lap. Bring dignity to the process. Get the ice cream out of the container. No more eating out of bags and containers. Maybe it was that. But I would just invite you, really, to not get caught up in these specifics. This is how we start parsing things out. And people want to, and I'm not asserting that whoever put this question out is doing that, but we're always looking for ways, or I find that we often are, right? As I've been in these rooms for decades, I mean, I'm 56. I've been in the rooms for 34 years. I just choose to spend my time figuring out, oh, that worked for you. Gosh, like my sponsor says, instead of when something comes up and it feels outlandish to me and I want to, you know, vote you off the island, or I want to go back to revert to any of the stuff that I learned in my home when I don't agree with somebody. Because what I learned in my home is somebody's right and somebody's wrong. That got changed here. And what my sponsor invites me to do, instead of you're wrong and I'm right, my sponsor invites me to put it on the that's interesting shelf. Right? So if I hear something and it doesn't make any sense to me, instead of not that you're wrong, but it's, that's interesting. Maybe I need more information here. So yes, it was possible for me to do that. And it's corroborated in conference approved Overeaters Anonymous literature in that first brown book OA 12 and 12. So that's all I can tell you is it was my journey, right? And my third step now, a third step, we always equate it with food. It doesn't have a lot to do with food anyway. Just following somebody's direction when it didn't make sense to me is me taking a third step. You see? It's not about the food. It's not about the food. But you know what my sponsor says? My sponsor's got 38 years of abstinence. No way. She said, and she's, you know, she's cute. You know, she's maintaining a 50-pound weight loss for decades. And she's, you know, she's Asian. So she's, you know, she weighs what, 12 pounds? But she always says for her, she doesn't even think this disease has anything to do with food. In AA, she said it doesn't have anything to do with alcohol. GA, it doesn't have anything to do with gambling. This has to do with perfectionism. This is a disease of coming to terms with the horror show of perfectionism, thinking that we have to do things perfectly. Or the backup for me is, even if you don't have to do it perfectly, if you're really sharp, you're going to be doing it the way I'm doing it. I mean, because, you know, it's me. that's the pathology. That's the stuff that will kill me more than the food. So that's all I got is my ash. And it worked for me. And I have sponsored lots of people over the years. And it does seem, it can seem unusual for people. But, you know, we're doing a workshop here. And when I'm working with somebody, we have a longer conversation. There's something really wonderful. I do feel comfortable that I'd be able to say, who has eaten perfectly in your abstinence? If anybody's done that, you can raise your hand. Good on you. I don't know that I believe you, but okay. It's not about that. It's a gentler process of how can we meet somebody where they are. I'm going to share something with you, and she lets me share this. I heard a woman who told a story that she had been molested by her father, and her mother filmed it. Her mother filmed it, and she saw the videotape. Now, are you going to want to, do you want to stand in front of that woman and say you can't work the steps until you can feel the feelings behind that? I don't want to do that. I'm not going to tell her that. And let me tell you something, that's not even the worst story I've heard. So I want to make it safe here, right? I want people to be cradled in Overeaters Anonymous. I would want all of us to be abstinent and be at goal weight. I think it's healthier. We're in less danger of diabetes, you know, all the, you know, hypertension, you know, heart disease. I mean, you name it, heart disease, all of it, stroke, all of it. But if I, because I can't make that happen, what I can do is I can make sure that everybody in Overeaters Anonymous knows that you are safe and you are loved here. And if you want to work the steps, I need you to be honest with your food. You can't lie about your food. If you're going to lie about something more interesting than your food. Tell me that you used to date Brad Pitt. But you don't need to lie about your food. But I want people to know you're safe here. And we are going to start on the journey of the step work as it worked for me. And when you are finally done and you hit that tipping point and you realize, oh, there is something so much, abstinence tastes so much better than any food I've ever eaten. Once you get there, then we're home free. I just want to make it safe for people. I don't, because my disease wants me dead. It wants me dead, but it'll settle for me being alone in a room, hating myself. I don't want that for anybody.
Thank you, Sheila. That's all the time we have for questions. Thank you again so much for your message, Sheila. I'm so happy you were here. Okay. And after the workshop closes, the Zoom room will remain open for additional questions and 2-minute shares. So people who will be able to ask.
And oh dear. And I just want you to know, Jay, I so understand. It happens to me too with my sponsor. I sometimes just go on and I'm just, you know, I just get so excited. So I always bring it in and I say, I do it too. Because it's true, right? I mean, all of it's true, whatever it is. And if, you know, if somebody's done something, because again, I've heard things on fifth steps I haven't done. I haven't murdered anybody, but I've said, I know what it is to feel like you've done something so painful and hurtful that there simply isn't a way you can be forgiven. I understand. Like, I just make sure people know that I get this and I've done this. And I too sometimes get excited and I talk so much. It's just, I want to get some information across to you. And I'll tell you what, write it down today and you can read it to me tomorrow. Anytime anybody's talking about, tell them to write it down. Right? That's what my sponsor says to me.
Oh, thank you. Here's another one for you guys. I food sponsor a chronic slipper and relapser who is step sponsored in a different fellowship. She admits her powerlessness, but is also angry that she has this disorder. She's been in program for many years. What would you recommend? And I think this addresses an issue of people who are in more than one program. And to me, what OA, the flag in it was that the person was doing their step work in another in another program. Do you guys have something, some thoughts on balancing if you're in more than one fellowship?
I will comment on that one first. Three of my current four sponsees are AA, right? So they have, the first thing it has to be, I work with AA men, attempt to work with AA men a lot, because that's where we could get more men. You know, 193 people on this Zoom meeting today, I counted six men, right? And so that's about percentage. It's actually 13% of men. So I'm part of the men OA that I mentioned before, oamen.org. And we actively are trying to bring more men into, and the potential market is AA, right? AAers who have changed chairs on the Titanic. They put down the alcohol and pick up the food. And so three of my current sponsees are that. And the first thing that they have to learn is that the credits do not transfer. They do not transfer from AA, and that's the only program that I'll address. And yes, you do have to go through the steps again. Yes, you do have to get honest about some things that maybe you're able to do in AA. You know, there's a difference between recovery and just plain old sobriety. We have lots of dry drunks in this program. You have lots of dry drunks in AA who haven't really worked the steps, but they go to meetings every day. Go to meetings and don't drink. Go to meetings and don't drink, as they say. That doesn't work in this program. We have to go deeper. And so I talked to them about this. There's an old pamphlet. It's not OA approved, but it goes way, way back. And it's called When AAs Go to OA. And the first thing it talks about is how pissed off they are. You telling me I got to do that all over again? Are you crazy? I've spent 37 years sober, blah, 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 blah. And yes, you really do. So that's the first thing that I have to talk about with the AAers that I work with. And they get there. It doesn't take them long to understand that, oh my God, you're right. That donut is exactly the same as the alcohol. It does do the same thing to my brain. Oh my God, I never realized it. And what they usually end up saying is, you know, food has been a problem my entire life. Alcohol was just something I picked up, but food was really the problem. And I see that all the time. So one more comment. And so these guys or gals, now I do sponsor some women at my age. I didn't used to at a younger age, but I do now. They have to balance their AA program. They may go to a couple of AA meetings a week, and they may go to two or three OA meetings a week. They have to balance that. But I tell them, working on the food now, so maybe you got to do a little more OA meetings than you do AA. Whatever works, you have to balance, but remember the one that you're working on for now. I'll stop there.
Thanks, Don. Sheila, anything on that one?
Yeah. I wasn't clear if this was a situation where somebody is working the steps in, you know, a program like AA or something, or if it was one of the other food programs, because there's other food programs. And so I don't food sponsor people. I don't sponsor somebody with the food unless I'm taking them through the steps. So, because I just don't want to contribute to any idea that this is about a diet, right? That this isn't tied in with your step work. And even if you're doing your step work over here with Mary, but you would be doing the food sponsorship with me, well, there's relevant information I'm not getting because I'm not hearing what's going on over here. Your food is the caboose to the train, right? That's not it's not enough to change the food. It's if I don't do, if you're not doing the work over here, and you're eating a certain way, you're not going to be eating that way for long anyway. And so I just don't have any experience with this. I never went with anybody to have anybody be my food sponsor while I'm, you know, telling, you know, Susie my secrets and, you know, working out my food over here. So all I can do is do that. I the thing that I was thinking it was initially talking about is, you know, other food programs and, you know, because there are food programs where it's, you know, it's, you're directed to weigh and measure very specifically in food plans and things like that. And, you know, and again, I celebrate it all. It all works, right? There are overweight abstinent people in both, you know, programs that are very structured and rigid with weighing and measuring and in Overeaters Anonymous. And none of it is my business. None of it's my business. All it means if I'm sitting in a meeting discerning what somebody's, you know, sharing or how they're dressing or what they weigh or any of that thing, all that tells me is I need to go to an Al-Anon meeting. That's all it's telling me, right? So, so yeah.
Okay. Well, obviously there are others, but